Hey, how's it going, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to a new episode of the Phoenix MMA Podcast. Apologies for not having an episode in a little bit. Been very, very busy. Good stuff. A lot of good things. Really busy. Again, just busy. And I need good episode ideas. I don't want to just push stuff out if it's just some fluff. So there are going to be some announcements, some recap, because of the gym. We've had a lot of stuff going on. And I actually video, or you might have seen this on Friday that I dropped the episode. I actually did this podcast on Friday. Usually do the podcast episodes on Fridays. I did it on Friday, but it would not upload, so there was just an issue with the app. It wouldn't upload correctly, so it's actually good because so I'm gonna add some recap, my thoughts, briefly on the Saturday. There was Gordon Ryan versus Bo Nickel. Bo Nickel, multiple time NCAA national champion in wrestling, really ridiculously good wrestler, college wrestler. Olympic level wrestler versus Gordon Ryan. Gordon Ryan, ADCC champion, and no-gi Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu world champion. They had a modified rule set, so there's going to be a little entertainment for that for the match. It was a fun match to watch. It was a good one. It was really cool, and then also there's going to be some value, so a learning opportunity there. The really cool matches, the cool thing is when you start doing MMA, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, wrestling, kickboxing, boxing, when you start watching the really high level fights and competitions. You'll get an extra value because you're training. When you watch them, it's kind of like you are actually studying film when you watch high level competition, and there are things you can break down. So normal fans just watching it, and normal people like to drink beer or drink a little bit. I actually like to watch high level competition completely sober and sharp. The atmosphere of being in a sports bar, it's exciting and everything, but it's equally as exciting to me to hear if it's good commentary, which I'm going to talk about the promotion. Their commentary was, it's hard to be a good commentary. It's very difficult to do. Quality ones are rare. So this one, I'll have a couple little jabs at them, little things, but again, it's difficult to do, but you just need to do your homework and you need to practice and you need to, all these things you've probably learned in school. If you're going to do a speech, you need to look in the mirror and you need to speak and you need to practice. You you need to have good content. There are some silly conversations about things like people not wearing a rash guards, like just fluff. Like, come on, there's so many interesting things to talk about. Do that instead. There are some great commentators. Dominic Cruz, great one. Joe Rogan, really cool. My coach Robert Drysdale actually commentates for ADCC and Burkut and a lot of pro jiu-jitsu events. Good one as well. Frank Mir, always a great commentator. So if you're wondering, hey, who's a good commentator? Roy Jones Jr., good commentator. Bernard Hopkins. So I'm not just saying that all of them are bad. There are really good quality ones. And if you notice all those that I just mentioned, there was no Stephen A. Smith. There's no can you believe it, this and that. All of them. Actually, the good ones usually have experience. So the other ones, it's just ridiculous. They're pandering to like the lowest common denominator. It's ridiculous. It's you don't watch football if you don't understand the scoring system. So just don't watch MMA or boxing or jiu-jitsu if you don't understand the scoring system. Don't dumb down the sport for people who don't want to learn the sport and actually understand how it works. You're going to ruin your actual base of fans and stuff, because they want actual good content and good commentary. So get the what is it, Skip and Shannon Sharp and Stephen A. Smith. Get the just no. No, they just don't. They don't need to be in it. Unless they get educated, then they need to. But anyway, sadly, the majority of the population, when it comes to sports, doesn't actually want to understand things. They just want to bounce from sport to sport in a topical fashion, which there's just no substance to it. But anyway, I'll get off my soapbox since nobody likes to hear you complain anyway. But maybe I can make you laugh with it. All right, announcements. A couple weeks ago, we got some really cool stuff that happened. So, since we haven't had a podcast, a couple weeks ago, we had Diego, Freddie, and Bradley fight. Freddie and Bradley both won. Diego lost by decision, but he had a really good outing. He landed some good shots. This is his first fight he's ever had. He's 17 years old. He's still in high school, and he fought a grown man who looked like he actually outweighed him by at least 15 pounds, maybe 15 to 25 pounds, was significantly bigger. And the last round, his opponent was being smart and was holding on to his lead and was actually circling, and Diego was the aggressor. Again, he's 17 years old. He's in high school, and he's fighting a grown man from a reputable good gym as well. Diego just needs more experience, but he did really well. Freddie with his win, his victory, has set himself up. He is now the number one contender, his number one contender fight. So he will, in the spring, the next event, he will be fighting for the Warriors Den Fighting Championship. He'll be fighting for their title. Again, that kid's a freshman. Freddie's a freshman, and he's looking to win his second title now. Freddie, kudos to Freddie. He's tearing it up. He has wrestling practice Monday through Friday, and then he comes and does Muay Thai practice. He's got wrestling practice, high school wrestling, his second year wrestling, his freshman in high school, and then comes to Muay Thai practice, and he has a number one contender fight while he's doing that. So he's on the right track. Did really well. I say Bradley went out there. He was fighting for a finish. The fight when I thought it was a razor close decision that went Bradley's way during the night of the fight. But then when I got to rewatch it, luckily the Warriors Den Fighting Championship, they do pretty well at their their media, so their turnaround time on putting out the broadcast of the show isn't too long, so they got it up on YouTube pretty quick. And definitely rewatching as Bradley took the first two rounds and his opponent took the last round. So, but good to rewatch and good learning experience. So we did well there. It's wrestling season for our middle schoolers and our high schoolers. I got a quick list. I may forget somebody. I really apologize if I did, but just a little shout out to all of our wrestlers that are practicing right now. Some of them are just focusing on the wrestling season. You got Luis, who's a sophomore, but I think right now he's still undefeated, and he's looking to place in state this year. He definitely has the ability to do that. He has the potential to do it. We got Luis, Freddie, Isaiah in high school. Middle school, we got Xavier, Jose, Carlos, Layla, Jack, Joseph. Jack and Joseph, first year wrestling. They in a tournament a little bit ago, they got a second and third place. It's their first year wrestling. Freddie, his first year wrestling from just doing our jiu-jitsu class, because we incorporate a good amount of wrestling and takedowns into our class. That's one of my pet peeves with Brazilian jiu-jitsu gyms and practitioners, is they don't implement and they don't work on their takedowns in wrestling, which, do whatever you want to do, it's going to be a weakness if you don't work on it. It's laziness. We have one of our blue belts, and I have some announcements with him as well, but we've had a couple matches where high school wrestlers, he has out-wrestled high school wrestlers, where they haven't been able to take him down, and he's actually taken them down. And he never wrestled in high school. No judo background, no wrestling background. He actually got a second place at the Nashville Open after 13 months of training as a blue belt. So 13 months, 13 months total, no wrestling, no judo. Blue belt in jiu-jitsu, got second place at the Nashville Open, and did really well. Honestly, even first place, he could have got first place in the match. He wasn't outclassed in the match. It's just the first time that you get into the finals, everybody goes through it. Where first, when you go to a bigger tournament, it was at the Nashville Open, which is an IBJJF tournament, International Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Federation tournament. For us, in April, it'll be 3 years we've been open, so it was a step up for competition, and now we're getting good enough. We had a good team that went and competed at that. We're getting good enough where we can compete at that higher level. We'll have, in the springtime, we'll have the Pan American Games in March. We'll have the World Championships coming up, and we're just going to keep on going. But when we first opened the gym, I knew that there was going to be a process, there was going to be a growth phase. The first 2 years was going to be growth, to get our legs underneath us, and now it's fun because we're really starting to come alive. And our Muay Thai, we're getting a competitive Muay Thai team, we're getting a competitive Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu team, we're getting a competitive wrestling team, and it's just, the better that everybody in the room gets, the better everybody gets. Everybody helps each other out, so that cooperation and competition, there's a nice there Lots of people will isolate either one. They think it's only competitive or it's only cooperative. You want both of those. They're two huge assets that we have as human beings that we can do with each other in the community and team and our team atmosphere. So we always want that. We want the competitive and the cooperation between each other, and you're making everybody better, and it's a fun place to be. So thanks everybody for doing that, working hard. We have announcement as well, for anybody interested in wrestling. If you're a wrestler yourself, or if you have children that are wrestlers, or some of our students, we are going to add a wrestling practice when this wrestling season is over. So a wrestling practice where you wear your wrestling shoes, working on folk style and freestyle wrestling. So we will have an official wrestling practice. We're going to start with one day a week. Where the goal is to build it up to 2 days a week wrestling practice. And also the other goal is to compete in wrestling tournaments year-round. So during the school year or during the school season, they will anybody who's in middle school or high school or college will be obviously wrestling for the school. But in the off-season, we'll also be doing freestyle and folk-style tournaments. So what that's going to open us up to is right now we'll have Muay Thai fights. We'll have students, teammates that are competing in Muay Thai, Pancration, Youth Pancration, MMA, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and wrestling tournaments year-round. So if you're a wrestler or you have someone who is a wrestler, you can let them know at the end of this season there will be a wrestling practice, at least one a week, good chance too. And we'll be not wrestling for MMA, not wrestling for jiu-jitsu, which is going to translate, but actually straight wrestling so that you can compete. We have a lot of people that want to win state championships or city championships in middle school and high school, so this is going to really help you if you stay on the mat year-round. It's going to help your Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu game if you're in that class. It's also going to help your MMA game if you're in that class. So we're adding that. That's another announcement. We also, let's see, last announcement, and then we'll get to the actual podcast, how to use your BJJ playbook. The last announcement is we have one of our blue belts, Hunter. He's going to the Nogi World. So this upcoming week, he's going to the Nogi World Championships. That will put him at 14 months of training. He'll be doing the blue belt Nogi World Championships. The Nashville Open, he beat the bronze medalist. So the blue belt bronze medalist from the World Championships, he already beat. So that's a good confidence boost going into the tournament. He has a large bracket, so he'll have some tough opponents. Full confidence that he can stand on the medal podium. Like I said, he's already beat the bronze medalist. So don't be surprised if you see him in the finals of the World Championships after 14 months of training. Again, it's actually not that complicated. There are some things that are complicated when it comes to it. The majority's not. The majority of it is willing to be consistent, work hard, not complain, not be lazy, get rid of limiting beliefs. Like when people say they can't take down a wrestler, or they can't whatever, or they're doing this or rather doing that, it's like, it's a waste of time. What are you talking about? If you work on your wrestling for 2 years, you will, if you're actually working on it, not being lazy, you will be a pretty good wrestler if you work 2 years year round. Of course, you're going to take breaks whenever you need a break. If you need a week off, not a problem. You're going on vacation, yes, not a problem. But when it comes to combat sports and really anything in life, or that I've noticed, if with your profession, you don't have a 3 month season to be good at a profession. It has to be a year round. It has to be a life work. But the same thing in combat sports, it's a year round sport. You're not going to do it for 3 months and then expect to win a state championship or, whatever, be on the top of the medal podium. It's just not going to happen. It's a year round. Now you have to be smart. You have to schedule your tournaments and you have to, schedule them, and you have to use periodization, and you have to schedule recovery time and rest time and all those things. Not saying that you have to train 7 days a week, 365, but to succeed, you're not going to be able to be lazy. You just want to be active and consistent, and that means even the days if you're looking to compete, the days that you don't want to train, you still got to train, even if it's a drilling session. There's a lot of stuff to do. But honestly, if you like training, it's pretty fun to do that. Doing something 99% is pretty difficult, but when you commit 100% to it, doing something 100% is for me, much easier than doing it 99%, because there's, you know, anyway, the commitment. So now we'll get to it. So how to use your BJJ playbook, all right? So I gave these playbooks out a couple weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, and I didn't give a huge explanation. There's a small little bit of details and explanation in there. But how to use this podcast is going to help you understand how to use your BJJ playbook, some tips, and how to get the best value out of it. Even though I gave it to all the members in the gym for free. So if you need one, I can email you a copy. And I'm also making a more polished version. I'm going to make a more, it's going to be way better. It's going to be at least 32 pages long of a playbook. I think this one was maybe just 10 or 12 pages. But that one will be coming out pretty soon. I'm working on that right now. And I'm still writing that. So I'm trying to get good content in it. So how to use your playbook. So first, just so you know, the playbook is going to follow the class curriculum and guide. So you can follow class week by week, and you can add what you like from the class to the playbook. So if you're wondering, like, you know, I usually announce Monday and Tuesday, okay, this week we're working on passing the guard from a low position or a crouch position. I'll announce those. And, you know, for that one, it's just suggested 3 guard passes to be good at. So I'm going to offer up lots of times. If you come to class, you'll notice that I don't just teach 3 guard passes throughout the week. There might be 6 guard passes. There might only be 3, but there might be 6. So what you're going to do is with your playbook, you're going to select the 3 guard passes that you like the most that were taught in class. Or you can research YouTube books or private lessons, or instructional videos as well, and then you plug in what you want to use as your game plan, it's your playbook. So just like a football team has a playbook, plays they can run, a basketball team as well, you're going to do the same thing with jiu-jitsu. And the benefit that you're going to have is it's not going to get rid of your ability to be spontaneous and connect other techniques, or if it's there, if it presents itself. But what it's going to do is it's going to give you a guide and a action list that these are my goals when I'm in a low position. These are the passes I'm working on. And it's also going to direct your drilling. And what you'll do is you'll adjust your playbook as the time goes. But when you first start training, there's so many things to learn that you can't see the forest for the trees, and trying to just juggle everything in your mind, it doesn't work very well that way. So you need to put some pen to paper, write down the techniques that you want to work, plug those in, and if you need to adjust them, it's fine. It's not a problem. But also with this, it changes the class structures a little bit. So the class structure is I'm going to be teaching those techniques, but if you've been researching or having instruction, you know, you've been researching instruction videos, YouTube, books, private lessons, whatever it is, and your game plan you've already selected, and it doesn't line up with that specific guard pass that maybe I teach for class, that's fine. As long as you're on topic, you can drill whatever you'd like. So if we're working on half guard, if we're working on half guard bottom, it's okay if you don't want to follow the exact curriculum that's in class. As long as you're staying on topic. So you're not doing flying arm bars during half guard week. You know, you're staying on topic, it's okay. You can work in that. So there's going to be some flexibility in the framework, and everybody's going to have a different style. So if you're really a go-getter and you're studying and you're researching a lot, I want to encourage that, and also I'm encouraging a high rep count on these techniques. So if I only rely on the time that you can get those reps in as open mat time, I understand some people, sometimes a lot of people, all they have is the time that they can, the class time, that's the only time they have to train. They can't make it in, they can't stay after, or they can't make it in early, or they can't come for an open mat time. It's fine. So that's why you have some flexibility, and as long as you're staying on topic. So yeah, so you got more freedom. But if you just want to follow the class structure, not a problem. And I will still be giving a curriculum and a lesson plan. So just more flexibility in the framework. So next we got, this is in the playbook, the recommended drilling reps. So your par is 60, 200s above that and 500s above that. That's for every technique. That's for every technique. So that's why you have the flexibility. So for you to get those 60, 200, or 500 reps in. You can use the drilling time. I set the clock to 5 minutes for drilling, just so you understand. And it's not hard for me to identify people who are going to learn quickly. It's really not that hard to identify talent. It's you can tell. It just takes time. Just takes months. But you can tell when I set the timer to 5 minutes after teaching a technique. People who are talking to their partners and asking good questions or working over things at the position, that 5 minutes, it will fly by if you're working on the technique. But there are also people who 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes in, start looking around, looking out of the window, and they stop drilling. They're not working on it. It's not a you have to be silent or anything. You're just working on the task at hand, and you're trying to work on it. You're trying to get better. You're trying to understand the position or the submission or how the mechanics work. Not a problem, but it happens. And the frustrating thing as an instructor and a teacher, I don't want to be mean or I don't want to be rude, but sometimes people will say, I'm having a hard time finishing my triangle choke. I'm having a hard time this or that. And sometimes it's the same people who at 2 minutes into drilling, 3 minutes into drilling are looking around, not working. So jiu-jitsu is, it's very, very much what you put in is what you get out. And it's just takes time, just takes some weeks and months, but you can see it coming. So those recommended reps, the 200 and 500 rep mark, you're definitely to do that. You're going to have to come in before class. You're going to have to stay a little bit after class, or you're going to have to come in to open mat times to get those. The 500 rep count, that's definitely for the competitors. So if your goal is to win a national championship or a world championship, your reps are going to go above this too. But this is just to give you a starter point so that you understand, because a lot of people think that they're working hard, but they have no idea what hard work actually is. They don't understand that someone drills 500 reps of every technique that they're working on every single week on top of sparring and all that stuff. But again, if your goal is not to be a national champion or a world champion, not a problem. Everybody does jiu-jitsu differently. But if you have those big goals, I put that in there so that you understand what it's going to take to get to that level. Because if you're not doing it, you're not going to be able to compete effectively because the people who are winning the tournaments are actually doing that. Recommend rep counts. Also, I didn't put this in, but this is another recommendation for the playbook. It will be in the the better version of the BJJ playbook, but you want to pick one submission to focus and hunt for a month. If something else presents itself, of course, take it when you're sparring. But what I mean by this is one submission a month. You could do it for 12 submissions, or you could break it up however you want. You could just pick 4 submissions for throughout the year, so that way you get 3 months focusing on it. You could do 6, 6 times 2, or you could do 12 individual submissions, however you want to do it. But with that, what you're doing is I want you to watch extra footage, extra tape on it. So you want to watch instructionals with, say, Kimura. You want to watch Kimura instructionals. You want to watch Kimura being applied in competition, whatever competition you're looking for, whether MMA, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Gi, or No Gi. You want to see those. And then when you spar, you want to find Kimuras. Like that's your goal. Every day you're sparring. Sometimes we're doing situation rounds. We're doing different things. Follow the class structure still, but you're hunting for Kimuras. Hunting for Kimuras when you're sparring. Now, other things are going to present themselves, but once a month, pick a submission, and for that month, you're just hunting for that submission. Just submission of the month, and your mind's looking for it. Like, think of it like playing Where is Waldo? You're never going to find Waldo if you're not looking for it. So if something else pops up, feel free, take it. If the guillotine's there, take the guillotine. Lots of times when you're going for that Kimura, they're defending the Kimura, it's going to open up for the guillotine, but you need to focus. And at the end of the year, you'll be pretty solid the submissions that you focused on. You'll be way better off than you were if you just kind of floated around with the breeze. This is a thing that a lot of people don't understand. I'll say it with jiu-jitsu, but it translates to other things. You have to have focus. You have to have a direction. You have to have a purpose. And your achievements or your goals are going to be easier to hit with no purpose and no goal. It's going to be very difficult, and it's less motivating too. So if you're thinking about, I'm gonna get that Kimura, when you're changing into your gi and you're in the locker room, I'm gonna get the Kimura. If you get 2 Kimuras while you're sparring, you're going to get a really good intrinsic value feeling from getting the Kimura, because it was your plan to get the Kimura, you hunted for it, you had to get it, it's not easy to get. And then when you finish it, and you're going to say, oh, sweet, awesome, like I did something that I was trying to do. And then that creates a positive feedback loop, and then you get just a snowball effect, and it keeps on going. But that's the next tip for your playbook. Okay, and then the next one is with your playbook. I've already had this question from several people. There are going to be some positions that you have no idea what to do with. Like, say if you're a beginner and you see in your playbook that De La Riva, and you're like, I have no idea what to do with De La Riva. You know, that's good. That's now you know what you don't know. Okay, so now you know what you need to work on. It's okay. We are gonna cover it as a week. There will be a week long curriculum in class with it. But if you want to work ahead, or if you're looking at that, whatever it is, maybe single leg X, and you're saying, oh no, like what? I don't know what to do here. You can wait for the class, and I will teach it in a week process or curriculum for a week. Or now you can study again, books, private lessons, instructionals. YouTube has ridiculous free stuff. The World Championships, Abu Dhabi, everything, or ADCC, all those things are on for free. Takedowns, you can watch the NCAA Finals, you can watch the Olympics, all of it's free. When I first started training, YouTube did not exist. YouTube did exist, but there was nothing on it. There was nothing for studying. It was terrible. When they did put highlight videos, I would watch the same highlight video over and over and over and over to find techniques. But the problem now is that there's so much information, and because there's so much information, you either get confused or you get spoiled and you don't use it, but it's there, so definitely use it. And the big thing with this too is if you're looking in through your playbook, I broke it down into 52 weeks just so you could put it into a year. And this is for your foundation, your Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I broke the positions down into 52 weeks for your foundation, so you have a well-rounded foundation for your Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu program. I could have made it 100 weeks, but I made it 52 just to compress it and to give you a base and not have some fluff and stuff. You will over time, you will possibly have multiple game plans, or there's a good chance. I think I have probably, or not game plans, but playbooks. You'll have several. I have several playbooks from different positions that are stuck in my mind. And again, they're just plays. You're just running plays. If I do this, they do that. I do this, I do that. These little sequences that you get into. When you first, the reason why I broke that down is so that you can see what you need to know in the future. You can research it, you can look it up, and you can start thinking about it. Because when you first start doing jiu-jitsu, there's not time in class to say, all right, here's all the positions. Like, there just wouldn't be time. You wouldn't be able to retain it either if I said, hey, all right, here are all the 52 positions that you need to know. You're not going to retain it. You're not going to be able to, there's no way. The instructor doesn't have time to do it. There's not podcasts that are breaking them down. There's not books that I know of that are breaking them down. I just put this together over, it took me at least 5 years to get all this together. My first instructor was a purple belt and didn't even know all the positions. So I did, please use it. It was a lot of headache and just a lot of studying. Luckily, when I get into something, I have definitely a strong obsessive personality. So when I get into something, I get super, super into it. So, that helps me learn, but this is going to help you out. And, when you first start training, it's hard to even know what you need to know because it's so complex, but I broke it down for you. I simplified it, but you're going to have to use it. You're going to have to work with it, and you're going to have to, fill in your playbook. So the last little tip I'll put on is it's okay to edit your playbook. You want to edit your playbook. That's probably the biggest value about your playbook. And in the future, you're going to have several playbooks. You might have five, you might have three, depending on, like, say if you're going against a college wrestler, you'll have a playbook. Okay, this is what I do against college wrestler. If you're going against a Baron Bolo practitioner, this is my play. These are the plays I run on them. If you're going against upper body, wrestler, thrower, judoka, you're going to have, so you will get to that point when you first start. Just focus on your first playbook as a well-rounded game, and then you'll have specifics against a different opponent, different types of opponents. But you want to edit it, okay? You want to edit it. You want it to constantly be it's constantly going to edit and update. You want to write down a plan and then you want to work on it. So where the editing is going to come is you might have three guard passes that you want to have, and you want them to sequence together. And in your mind, you think that they're going to sequence together really well, but then you write them down and it works. But then when you start drilling, it doesn't work how you thought. A leg is not in position, arm's not in position. So it doesn't mean you have to trash it, but it might be that you have to adjust it and find out, how can I get that arm there? How can I get the leg here? How can I move? That is the creative part of jiu-jitsu. Is you're going to have to, you write that playbook. You have to make a plan. If you're trying to say, I have to have a perfect plan before I do anything, it's like, you're not going to do anything. You're going to get paralysis by analysis. So first thing is you have to write down a plan, and then you have to start working your plan with drilling and sparring. And if something's not quite working, you can see, can you adapt it? Can you adjust it? I need that right wrist to be down by their hip. You will then connect the dots. That's how you find out how to connect the dots. Lots of times you can make adjustments. Sometimes you can't, and you will just have to trash it. But it's okay, because this is where you're getting the biggest benefit. By editing your playbook and adjusting your playbook, your mind is making these neural pathways and these connections between techniques. That's way better than just showing up to class, going through the motions, drilling the technique, and then rolling. You're actually having to make it make sense for you. So what you're going to do is you're going to find out setups that other people don't even know, unless you teach them, or one day you come up with your own instructional. You will find your own setups, and you'll find your own paths to do things. And again, if something just doesn't work, it's okay. All you gotta do is just trash it, just throw it away, and then put something else. But you're not gonna know that until you write down your playbook and then practice it. And that's where the real benefit's gonna be. Some things you're gonna have to delete, some things you're gonna have to edit. And this is the thing with like learning anything. If someone just tells you and you just listen how to do it, it's not gonna work very well. So you can't just be told how to do something. You can't just be shown how to do something. You have to be told how to do it. You have to be shown how to do it. And you have to physically do it yourself with your hands and your body. You have to feel it. But not only that, you have to do it yourself with your own mind, with your own brain. You have to do it. You have to connect those dots. If not, the value is not going to be there. It's not. Yeah, it's not the matrix. You can't just download it. People will ask, like, how do I block a jab, or how do I deal with an opponent's jab? Somebody's jabbing in the face. It's like, parry it, slip it. And then they'll look like, oh no, that didn't answer my question. It's like, it did answer your question, but the problem is you can't learn everything by just asking a question. How do I do this? And then the expert in that field can give you the answer, but it won't even seem like it won't satisfy you, because a parry or a slip deal with a jab, okay? They deal with a jab. A posture break, if somebody's posturing in your closed guard, a posture break that you work on will work. But the problem is, if you don't work on it, if you don't put the reps in, if your mind's not thinking about it, if you're not drilling it, if you're not doing it in sparring, and if you're not, again, your mind is not actually doing the work, then you're not going to get the benefit. You're just going to hear it. It's going to go in one ear and out the other ear. It's going to take effort. It's going to take calories. But luckily, jiu-jitsu is a lot of fun. So, and this goes across the board for Muay Thai, kickboxing, boxing. Luckily, it's a lot of fun. So it shouldn't feel like work. It should be fun. This should actually make your training more fun, should make you more successful. And if you're feeling lost at all, it should take away that always feeling lost when you're training, which most people feel for a good portion of time. You know, some people feel lost for 6 months, some people feel lost for a year, some people 2 years. So if you use it, it'll help out. So in closing on the playbook, and then we'll get some Gordon Ryan, Bo Nickel, my thoughts on that to close. Please use your playbook. It's only going to work if you use it. In the future, I am creating a more polished version of the BJJ playbook. That one will be for sale, because it's going to be a bigger version. It's going to be not just a basic folder like I gave everyone. It's going to be a nicer playbook. There will be more explanation, more details, more tips. a better format, more space for taking notes and things like that to help you out with your rep count. That'll be at www.thebjjplaybook.com, www.thebjjplaybook.com. It's not ready yet, but it will be in the near future. It'd be pretty cool. It's something I did years ago. It helped me. I did it as a blue belt, and it really, if you look on the Instagram page, there's a story that I've saved that's called The Notebook, and you can see everything from diet to strength conditioning to everything I drilled. I'd write down my sparring rounds every day. That was what I did to win a world championship. This playbook is going to be a more condensed version where you don't have to do all of that work. I condensed it together so that, you know, to basically get the best of that, but without as much writing and as much time, so that you can get done with class and you can just fill it in pretty quick. So not add too much time to your day. In the future too. So if you're one of my Muay Thai students, boxing, MMA, wrestlers, I'm going to have a playbook. I'm going to come out with a wrestling playbook, an MMA playbook, a Muay Thai playbook, a strength conditioning playbook, and also a competition playbook. So the competition one's more going to be like sports psychology and how to prep properly. So, those will be coming out in the future as well. All right. So that ends it on how to use your playbook. Also, if you haven't seen yet, we got a new Phoenix MMA hoodies and sweatshirts. So we got those just in time before Christmas and New Year's. I think we have 30 left, or maybe like 25 left, some 25 to 30 left, hoodies and sweatshirts. They're both $45. So if you want to get one of those, get them before they're gone. So Gordon Ryan and Bo Nickel. I don't have any notes for this. I'm just going to go quick. I thought about it a little bit. Watched the match last night. I watched it again today. It was a really cool match. I found it interesting. I like it. I like Gary Tonin's also calling out a high-level college wrestler as well. The crossover's fun. What I say? I'd say the biggest takeaway from this is basically Bo Nickel, master wrestler, ridiculous, one of the best people in the world, when it comes to takedowns and then mat work in a wrestling context. They competed in a rule set that was modified IBJJF rules. So it was IBJJF scoring, but no guard pulls were allowed and no leg locks, all right? So that's one of the big things, my frustrations with the commentators, is they don't understand. It's like, you need to understand what IBJJF rules and scoring are before you commentate on something. So and then also, if you're going to compete, you need to understand it as well. So a lot of the wrestlers I am a wrestler, and I have a lot of friends that are wrestlers. We're throwing out kind of crazy, or not crazy, they're just not accurate theories on what they thought would happen. Like, one of the theories was, well, Bo can just take Gordon down and stand up, take him down, stand up. It's like, incorrect. This is IBJJF scoring and rules. The whole point, that would be stalling. In Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, that's stalling. So you have to fight. You have to engage your opponent. If you're circling and you're just backing away, that's stalling. You're going to get penalized. Wrestling has stalling rules as well. If you're just circling and you're not engaging in the match, it's going to be stalling. But wrestling does allow that you can let your opponent get up. They actually get 1 point, so it's an escape, but people will do it as a strategy if their takedowns are better. But it's still from a proactive kind of viewpoint. It's a 1 point escape. So the thing, the bottom person gets up to their feet, you worked, you should get rewarded for that. But humans is game systems, and if you have better takedowns, you take your opponent down, you let him up, take him down, let it up. Okay. But wrestling has the same thought in mind that jiu-jitsu has, and it is that you're supposed to have a match. You're supposed to engage your opponent, and you're not supposed to flee the mat. You're not supposed to run away or just avoid the match. It's supposed to see who's better when you actually have a match, not who's better at running away or dodging things and stuff like that. Actually, let's have a match.
So you want to always learn to understand the rules. I had this when I competed. When I was in Brazil, I competed. I represented the city of Jundiaí in Brazil for a wrestling tournament, and I didn't understand the rules, and I had to learn on the fly. I thought it was normal folk style wrestling, but I got pushed out of bounds. My opponent pushed me out of bounds and scored a point. And I was like, oh, okay, all right. I get a point scored on me from going out of bounds. I didn't understand that, but this is really important. This is the biggest lesson from this match: is you want to understand the rule set that you're competing in, because it's really important. Every single tournament that you ever do, you want to know the rules as good or better than the referees know them. That's your responsibility. It's your responsibility to look the rules. They're going to have PDFs or on the website. You want to look head to toe. You want to read every single thing about it. And if you have a question, a rule that's kind of questionable, most tournaments you can ask the referee before the match, or you can ask someone at the admin table before the match. And if it's the IBJJF, you can't ask them there, but you can send emails. So you can send emails to them and ask for clarifications. But you're going to have to do that. And you want to understand the rules completely. So yeah, the first one's wrestling. It's like, take him down, let him up. It's like, no, that in jiu-jitsu, that's stalling. You have to engage. If you get a takedown, you have to engage. If you back away, and Bo was actually lucky in the match that he didn't get called for stalling more. I think the referee was kind of nervous that it's a big pro match, big event, it's main event, and they don't want to, they're trying not to be the deciding factor, but there was the commentary's like ridiculous, so they're confused. Gordon's in a leg entanglement, and he's using the entanglement to sweep, or his first attempt with it, he's being smart, he uses it as a takedown attempt that then gets him to a leg entanglement that he can sweep from to score. And Bo, multiple times, how he defends it is fleeing the mat, basically. So, again, this is IBJJF scoring. He gets scored 2 points because you're fleeing the mat as someone has a sweep. And they're supposed to, the tricky thing, Gordon posted this, is you are supposed to, if you get a sweep, you get a position like that, you're supposed to restart down. So Bo was also, the referee did him a favor by starting him back up on his feet. In the commentary booth, they're just clueless. They had no idea what's going on. They didn't even understand that Bo, when Gordon gave his back and he gave the throw, the suplex, when he gave him the throw, they didn't understand. One of the commentators didn't understand that. He's like, well, now Bo can just back away. And then the ref gives Bo a stalling call and tells him that he has to engage. And one of the commentary, they're confused at what's going on. It's like, come on, guys. Why are you commentating a pro jiu-jitsu event if you don't understand that you have to engage? You can't just circle and stall. This is the reason why Gordon gave his back. Bo was essentially stalling for the first 7-8 minutes. What he wanted to do is basically stall and get a takedown in the last minute to win the match. But it's like, yeah, Gordon's willing to give up getting thrown and turn his back and everything just to get the match to the ground. Because again, Bo, this is the tricky thing. Bo was not being offensive with his takedowns. Gordon is walking towards him. Bo is circling and backing away. Bo's wrestling is way better, but not only is his wrestling way better, this happens all the time. Even if your wrestling's better than the other person's and all they're doing is playing defense and all they're doing is stalling and circling and being defensive, it's very hard to take them down. That's the reason why when it goes to judge's decision, if you do that, you're going to lose the match. Same thing for MMA fight. If you're just being defensive and you're coming with punches, takedowns, attacks, you're going to win the decision more than likely than the opponent who's just circling and defending, especially for jiu-jitsu matches. Wrestling is very strict on stalling calls, and they were nice on the for IBJJF standards. They were really nice. They didn't penalize Bo as much as would be in a normal match. Again, the pressure of the event. So Gordon, how did he get away with the jumping, the leg entanglement? So he was using guard pulls were not allowed, and the commentators were off on this too, and they were like, this is a guard pull. He's like, no, it was a jumping leg scissor takedown. So it is a takedown that then gets you into a leg entanglement that could attack legs. All right, first it's a takedown attempt that fails, that then ties up your opponent and gives you a good position to attack the legs, but the legs run were illegal. But yeah, the one commentator was saying that, he's like, this is jumping guard. It's like, no, it's not jumping guard. It's a jumping leg scissor. It's a takedown that can enter into a submission or a sweep. But it's not half guard. It's not butterfly guard. It's not closed guard. This is a thing that a lot of wrestlers didn't understand. And a lot of wrestlers, they don't cross train into other things. They're just, you know, they're just focused on their sport. So they're not paying attention to what's going on. But it's not a guard. That is not a guard. So Bo with that, like, that's fine. Him scrambling and working and stuff and not giving that up, it's not a problem, because it's a takedown and a sweep attempt. It wasn't exactly that. But now going out of bounds, jumping out of the mat, you should be penalized for that. This is one of the biggest things I'm really frustrated about with all competition. Freestyle wrestling, they do that in freestyle wrestling, you're just going to lose the match quick. Do it in folk style wrestling, you're going to lose it quick if you're fleeing the mat. Jiu-jitsu is one of the only grappling sports that allows you to just flee the mat whenever you're going to get scored on or possibly submitted and get away with it. So they just got to get more strict on that. But circling and moving, they need to increase the mat space too. That's fine. Increase the mat space. Make it twice as big as it is right now. Their mat space is way too small for an event like that. But for the most part, yeah, Bo's evading. He had good scrambles and stuff, and he's a very good wrestler, so it wasn't like he doesn't have any idea what he's doing at all. The big throw is exciting, but I think it's funny. People get so excited about throws and slams and stuff, and it's exciting because there's something, it's big, there's amplitude, but oftentimes, like, a double leg with a slam doesn't do a lot of damage. If you land on the head, yeah, if it's a good one that knocks somebody out, all for it, but it needs to be good. The Pat Downey versus Nick Rodriguez, that match too, that match was like boring. I saw the highlights first. I say boring, it was still fun to watch, but Pat Downey, they show him like throwing Nick Rodriguez, is like, man, it looked bad. Nick Rodriguez, if it was actual fight or a match, could have easily got on top from that suplex, that throw. And anyway, it's just you're getting big points for freestyle rules, throwing and stuff like that. But just like judo, sometimes a big throw doesn't actually equate to being, you can get an ippon off a throw and then your opponent's actually landing on top of you when they're rolling through. So anyway, and then Gordon uses he has that underhook to the right side that he used on Bushesha, to sweep Bushesha. He uses that to get to a triangle for the win. Bo picks up Gordon and slams him, which I'm glad Gordon just went ahead and finished the triangle, but also for IBJJF rules, that would be a disqualification immediately if you slam somebody, so please don't do that if you're at the Pan American Games, the World Championships. Do not slam your opponent, but I'm glad that Gordon didn't protest it, because again, unless you're slamming your opponent, like, you're good at slamming, you're slamming them on their head, it's a good one, it doesn't escape you from the submission. Lots of people say that to be like, well, if I could slam, I'd get out. No, you wouldn't. No, just hold on to it. I'm gonna really choke you. I'm really gonna pop your elbow more for trying to slam me. If you slam them on their head, yeah, awesome, it's a KO. But there's plenty of slams that do not result in KOs. There are plenty that do as well. But that was a good example of one that Bo didn't have the position to get a good knockout slam. And also, if you have experience in your triangles and arm bars and back rolling and things, you can, you know, you get slammed on your back, it's like getting thrown or a really hard takedown. So lots of times it won't even knock the breath out of you. Now you still got to protect your head. Again, if you're in an IBJJF tournament, do not follow that saying, hey, those are the rules, because slams are usually not allowed. But Gordon just ate the slam and just finished the submission. But not really surprised there how it went. But the only thing I was surprised about really with the match is that they allowed as much stalling and retreating of the mat as than I expected. So again, I wasn't surprised that when Gordon is putting his leg up for the single leg, Bo wasn't biting on it. It's like, duh, he's gonna try to guillotine you, he's gonna try to Kimura you off of your takedown, so don't do that. And even if Bo would have taken the early single leg or takedown at any time early in the match, it's, you can't back away, you can't evade the match is now on the ground and you have to engage Gordon. And so it was really just a time bomb at that point. But still, it was a really cool match. I like stuff like that. It's fun to do it. So I also liked Floyd Mayweather versus Conor McGregor. I like it. So so many things are boring. So I want legitimate matchups, but then also some of the entertainment matchups are fun as well. But that's just the that's it. That's my thoughts on it and how to use your BJJ playbook. That one'll be coming up. The better version, www.thebjjplaybook, will be coming up pretty soon. But in the meantime, use your playbook you got for free, and see everybody this week. See everybody tomorrow in the gym training, and Yeah. Hope you enjoy this episode. Thanks. Bye.